From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of October, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Joe Vaklovic. He's at Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee. Jackie Vakes is out of the office today. And a bit later in the program, we'll take a tour of the planet with meteorologist Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It is brr, cold and snowy in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt. And we'll hear about dry conditions and South America and in Russia and in the Plain States. And, oh, we'll get an update on other forecasts, too, on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, December corn today up 5 cents. It settled at 4.13¾. The March at 4.16¾, 3½ higher, and the May up 3. Its settlement price 4.18½. July at $4.18, 2½ higher, and next year's December corn 0.75¢ lower, settled at $3.99½. November soybeans 8 higher, $10.72 the settlement price. January 10.71½, up 7¾. March 10.58¾, up 5¾, and July at 10.55¾, 6 higher. November beans at 9.82½ for next year, up 3¼. The bean oil 11 cents lower. The bean meal up $6.90 on the afternoon. Wheat futures July soft red at 6.21, up 2½, and the hard red July at 5.86¼, down a penny and a quarter. Live cattle futures into the December contract at $104.57½, 87½ cents lower for the day. Feeder cattle for the November futures up 37½ cents at $131.15, and lean hogs of December there at $69.20, down a nickel for the afternoon. The crude oil about $1.69 higher. Ethanol futures up 5½ cents, $1.52 the settlement price there, or trade. And diesel fuel down 3¾ cents at $1.13¼. We're now joined by Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. He's out of Gallatin, Tennessee. Hey, thanks, Joe, for being with us for the afternoon. We really do appreciate that. And because you're filling in for the day, again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Happy to be on.
Well, tell me about the fundamentals of this marketplace as you see it now.
Well, if we want to talk row crop markets specifically, this is a demand-driven rally. And demand-driven rallies typically, not in all cases, but typically have some more staying power perhaps than supply scare rallies. If you think about the rallies that have occurred in say, corn or soybeans over the last 4 or 5 years, the ones that were weather-driven during the summer, those rallies typically lasted, what, 2 or 3 weeks at best? In these sort of demand-driven rallies, they typically have more staying power, a little bit more enthusiasm behind them. It's exports is part of it, and we all know that China's been an aggressive buyer of soybeans. They have the biggest book of U.S. soybean sales on record. They also have the biggest book of U.S. Corn, well, actually would be purchases for them, on record. We also have our best, in total, best new crop soybean export book on record, and I think corn is I don't have the corn chart in front of me. It's got to be very close. So exports, fantastic. In regard to beans, domestic processing has been fantastic. USDA is projecting that U.S. processors are going to crush a record amount of beans this year. So not only are we looking at record exports in beans, we're looking at record crush. In corn, the demand is good via exports. It's very good via feed. Ethanol is still a soft spot that has not totally recovered. Ethanol production still running a good 5 or 6% below last year's pace on average. So we've got some work to do there. But the different thing about this rally versus past rallies that we've seen the last 3 or 4 years is that this is a demand-driven deal. And most of the rallies we've seen really since like 2014, I mean, they've all pretty much been supply scare rallies.
It's demand-driven by China. Does it make any difference that Brazil may need to import soybeans? And even that is a China-driven demand function because of the purchases they made last summer.
Yeah, I don't see the Brazil thing as being a big story. You've got a country that's going to be harvesting what in all likelihood will be a record crop 4 months from now. So is there potential for Brazil to import some beans over the short term to cover some needs? That's a possibility. Does it turn into like a big deal where they're buying U.S. beans at a breakneck pace? I don't see that happening. I suppose anything's possible, but just the fact that they're going to assume, barring a major, major weather issue, they're not going to have a problem when you go out to, say, February.
The Chinese demand is driven by what? ASF is now not a problem, or they had a short crop, combination of both?
It's a combination of both. The Chinese hog herd has recovered pretty substantially. It's not back to where it was in, like, you know, 2017, but it's recovered. Pork output in the third quarter in China was up 18% year over year. So they are certainly on the road to recovery, and that is what that's what's enabled them to come in and be such an aggressive buyer of beans. You know, part of the interesting part of the trade war is that the onset of the trade war coincided like almost exactly with the onset of African swine fever, meaning that for China, if they were going to get into a trade war with the United States and tariff U.S. beans, that was about the best time ever for it to happen to them. If African swine fever never happened, I don't know that the trade war would have played out the way that it did, because I think China would have needed some U.S. beans. They were able to avoid U.S. beans, I think, because of African swine fever to some extent. So it's kind of interesting that when you go back, you know, 2-3 years ago, what actually happened and how the timing was so, like, I don't know if I'd say coincidental, but just how it all kind of lined up.
Interesting. So where do producers go from here? Because at this point, you're now telling me that this is a demand-driven rally. It has more staying power, which probably tells producers, hey, I should have more staying power too. Is that actually true?
Grain marketing is difficult. It's not easy. The very first thing that any producer should do is take a look at their revenues, take a look at what sort of profits are available at these price levels, and decide if they're happy with that, and decide if it works for them in regard to the business. And farming is a business. It's about making money just like every other business. So that's the very first thing to examine. I always tell farmers in regard to marketing, the most important tool that is out there are your numbers, your profitability, your profit margins, that sort of thing. All that being said, the farmer doesn't want to miss out if beans go up another buck or corn goes up another buck or whatever. So that's when you've got to start to, you know, maybe look at some sort of option strategy that can set a floor in the market while leaving the upside open. Or maybe you get aggressive with some of your 2020 sales here, but you leave a lot of 2021 unpriced because you've got time there and maybe you're friendly to market. But I think this is the time to be managing risk. I think this is the time to certainly, if you're not looking at your marketing situation and you haven't looked at it in a while, you've got to pull out your spreadsheets and just see what sort of massive shift has occurred in terms of profit per acre and see if it's interesting to you, because it probably will be.
Hey, Joe, thanks so much today. I appreciate it. I have a different set of questions for you as we close out, mostly because I follow you and others closely. You have your own podcast called, Grain Markets and Other Stuff. How's that going?
I have a podcast. It's called Grain Markets and Other Stuff. It's available on just about every podcast app that there is, so Apple and Google and all other ones. It's also a YouTube channel now that started about a month ago.
Oh, nice.
And it's really great. I've had a lot of interaction with some people that you would expect would be interested, but also a lot of people that you wouldn't expect to be interested. You wouldn't believe how many people from overseas listen to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
People from Brazil, from Argentina, from China, from Russia, all over the place. And I don't know if my content is good or not, but the podcast has done phenomenally well. I started at the beginning of the year. I think I'm over 200,000 downloads in that time frame. So it's definitely, people are listening to it. People are interested in it. I update the content constantly. I do 7 to 8 episodes per week. I do one every single morning at 6:30 Central Time, and then I'll do 2 or 3 other kind of additional episodes in addition to the daily stuff. So I'm throwing a lot of content out there, but it's definitely been a good thing for me, at least.
Yeah, the international visitors surprised me at first, too, because they're there.
It is surprising, and they're out there, and the U.S. market is a big deal to everybody around the world, you know?
You bet. Hey, thank you, and good luck. I appreciate what you do there, and thanks for filling in for us today, too.
No problem. We'll see you, Todd.
Yep, Joe Vaclavec is with Standard Grain. He's out of Gallatin, Tennessee. Up next, we'll check in with the Climate Prediction Center, which is just out with its long-range national weather outlook for this coming winter. USDA's Gary Crawford has this look.
I'm sure you've heard this song from The Sound of Music a million times.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Yes, favorite things. But among the most unfavorite things for me is the whole list of songs glorifying that one season of the year, and all of the singers sing them.
I love the winter
weather,
so the two of us can get together.
Oh, for me, I hate winter. It's a nasty time. My only question at this time is, how nasty is it going to be this year? Now, for many people, it's not such a hated time, I know, but many of us still wonder just what kind of winter we're going to have. And as if by magic, the government's Climate Prediction Center has just issued its National Winter Outlook.
Warmer, drier south and cooler, wetter north.
Mike Halpert there with NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, giving the very stripped-down version of the winter outlook. Unstripped, it sounds like this.
Wetter than average conditions across most of the northern United States, drier than normal conditions across the entire southern U.S. and southern Alaska are also favored. The temperature outlook favors warmer than normal conditions across the southern two-thirds of the continental U.S., along the entire east coast, in Hawaii, and in western and northern Alaska. Below average temperatures along the northern tier of the country from Minnesota to the Pacific Northwest are also most likely.
And this time, the weather analysts are a little more sure of their long-range winter forecast for the U.S. than usual, and there's a reason for that, and it's happening thousands of miles away. And so, by radio magic, actually by radio chicanery and fake sound effects, we take you to the waters of the equatorial Pacific, which are in the process of cooling down, producing somehow in the atmosphere what's called a La Nina weather pattern across the globe. And in most years when that happens, there are some other things that usually happen.
Typical impacts during La Nina winters include warm conditions across the southern half of the country and along the Atlantic seaboard.
Agriculture Department meteorologist Brad Rippey. And Brad, you have no idea how happy that part makes me. You know how I hate cold, icy weather, and I rant and rave about scraping the ice off. Okay, Brad, I won't go there, but for your sake, I won't. So, a warmer than average winter for the southern half of the country, also where you and I live along the Atlantic seaboard.
And we also expect to see drier than normal conditions in a rather vast area across the southern tier of the country, generally from central and southern California all the way to the southern Atlantic coast.
So a little less chance for winter rains, ice storms, and snow for those areas. But when La Nina is going on, what about folks in the north? What's their usual winter fate during a La Nina year? Well, it might sound like this.
There is the potential for a cold, stormy winter across the northern plains and upper Midwest.
Ooh, so our friends in the north could be in for it this time, maybe, but we'll see how it pans out. But that's the forecast as it stands right now for this upcoming winter. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
On this Wednesday, Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Thanks for being with us, Drew.
Thank you. Thank you. It is a happy day. The weather's not so great, but it's a happy day.
You know what? It's fall. It would be nice if we had sunshine. However, if you are in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, and I guess you kind of get used to this, but it's snow and it looks like it's going to be darn cold there, too. Can you tell me about that to begin with?
Yeah, you know, as I get older, it's hard for me to recognize the fact that summer's over still. And if I was up there in the northern plains, I'd be having a real problem right now. And I'm sure that some are. because I am still in the summer mode and can't believe it's as cold here as it is. But anyway, they've had, they had 10 inches of snow in southern Minnesota yesterday, pretty broad-based event, actually coming out of eastern South Dakota and all the way into western Wisconsin. That was not fun. And now we have snow falling across South Dakota and southwestern Minnesota, and this is going to become a major event this afternoon and evening and overnight tonight. We're going to see another 3 to 9 inches in general in southern North Dakota and a big part of central and northern South Dakota and into central Minnesota with local totals of 10 to 14 inches. It means that some of these areas that already have snow on the ground are going to end up with something of the order of 12 to 16 inches on the ground, and it's just the 21st day of October. A long ways to go for the winter. It is going to turn bitterly cold behind this. We're going to see those temperatures go below zero in Montana. We're talking 20 to 30 degrees below normal for this time of the year. Very similar weather pattern to what we had in early September when we had those early season frost and freeze events occurring down into the Central Plains. And this return of the pattern bothers me a little bit. I think we're going to see this off and on as we go forward through the winter season. So for right now, of course, this is a big issue for some travel across the Northern Plains and a big problem for those corn producers that are wanting to get their corn out of the fields in the Dakotas and Minnesota. You know, we had all kinds of trouble last year getting the crop out, and here we go again. And then, of course, the bitter cold is certainly going to be an issue with just being uncomfortable for a while up that way.
Well, how about the rest of the Corn Belt? Cold weather, wet weather?
Yeah, you know, with the cold up in the north central part of the U.S. and still somewhat tropical in the southeastern states, you set the stage for a southwest flow pattern aloft and frequent collisions in these atmospheric temperatures. And so you're going to end up with quite a contrast, and we'll end up with a lot of rain occurring across the heart of the Midwest. It should rain frequently for the next 7 days across the Midwest. So field work in the lower and eastern areas is not going to progress any better than the snow-covered areas in the Northwest. And we'll look for better weather at the end of next week, going into the following weekend, and really on into the first full week of November. I think conditions will get a bit better. But, you know, it's going to progressively cool down a little bit. So those evaporation rates may be a little slow for us, and getting back in the fields may be a slow process as well.
I made note that the hard red winter wheat, about 72% or 73% sown already, but still under dry conditions in most of those areas?
Yes, definitely. There is an opportunity. With this cold air coming into the north central U.S., we are going to push a very strong surface high pressure system down into the northern plains, and that's going to force the wind out of the east northeast across the central plains and create upslope conditions. So there is potential that we're going to get a little bit of moisture to fall from western Nebraska and eastern Colorado into the Texas panhandle. Moisture totals aren't going to be real great, maybe a couple tenths of an inch, but you know that wheat crop is nothing more than a weed, and it's pretty hard to kill weeds. Even if you know, if you get a few hundredths of an inch, the weeds just thrive. So I think the wheat itself will likely respond at least somewhat to this, and might help to buy them some time. Yeah, the planting and the emergence is really just fine so far, but it has been 30 days since a lot of that region's had any rain. So it's really time to get some moisture in the ground.
Let's stay with that crop, work our way across the northern hemisphere into the southern hemisphere, and then we'll come back up through South America at some point. So Russia, Ukraine had been dry Black Sea area, especially for wheat growing regions. Any better there?
There was a little event that took place I think it was Monday of this week, and that did produce about a 75-mile wide band across a part of Russia's southern region that picked up on a half inch to an inch, about an inch 20. Now, that sounds like nothing, but to them, that was gold. And they hadn't had any rain in that region for quite some time. And so this was really helpful. Obviously not enough to fix moisture deficits in the long run, but the wheat crop is going to respond to that and we'll do a little bit better. Now there's still about 75% of the Russian southern region that's still hurting for moisture, and the forecast models continue to drag their feet on bringing in any kind of real meaningful moisture in that area. We may see some spits and spats, but there's not going to be a fix-all for them, at least not through this next 10 days to maybe 2 weeks.
In Australia?
You know, Australia, it benefits greatly from La Nina in the sense of easing long-term drought, and that's what's going to happen in the eastern part of the country. The rain is expected to become more frequent in Queensland and New South Wales. Now, New South Wales, of course, a very big producer for small grains and canola. And as the rains start to increase, and they're going to do that next week and then continuing right on through the month of November, I'm a little concerned that there's going to be a grain quality issue evolving there. So we're going to be watching that real closely. In the meantime, Western Australia hasn't done very well with rain recently, and I think we've lost a little yield across that part of the country. It's not dramatic, but you add that to some of these other issues, the U.S. plains and Russia's southern region, and you know, it starts to add up a little bit. So keep an eye on that. I don't think it's going to get any worse, though, not in Western Australia.
Any concerns about the Argentine wheat crop?
I think the worst is over for them. The Argentine crop struggled for a long time, but most of the driest areas in Argentina have just received significant rain this week, and the crop was already reproducing about 2 weeks ago in that driest area. So the rains are certainly putting a stop to the stress. I don't know that you're going to see any big improvement in the yield potential there. But in the other areas of Argentina, which have done better with moisture this year, certainly this moisture that has just occurred this week and that which will continue for another 7 days, is going to turn out to really help to finish out the crop in a favorable manner.
Any reason to be concerned about spring planted or corn and soybean crops in Argentina?
Actually, I think things are looking really good now that it has rained and that we have another week coming up. I think that the early corn and the sunseed crops that are already in the ground will respond real quick to the moisture and do much better. And then the start of soybean planting begins next week, around November 1st, I believe. And so the moisture that's occurring right now, it should be off and running rather aggressively in that first week of November with a lot of crop going into the ground. So I think it's looking up and up on Argentina for right now.
Anything from Uruguay, Paraguay, or southern Brazil?
Southern Brazil is running dry already. You know, La Nina has a tendency to make their rainfall lighter than usual as they go into the summer season. Usually that's a November, December phenomenon, especially December, but we're already starting to see below average precipitation in some of this region from Rio Grande do Sul up into southwestern Sao Paulo. And that is a little bit of a concern in my mind. I hate to see them get behind the eight ball so early in the growing season. It could turn out to be something rather interesting down the road. In the meantime, we're turning the corner in center west and center south Brazil, where we weren't able to get that early soybean crop in the ground as early as folks wanted it. It is raining there now and will continue to rain as we go forward through these next 2 or 3 weeks. So the soybean planting is going to just take off like a gangbuster here for at least in those areas for the next couple of weeks.
Thank you so much for the tour.
All right. You have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.